Good morning. You're listening to Short Stories with Mrs. Sam, brought to you by the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. Tune in every week on Sunday at 8:30 a.m. to WHDD 91.9 FM to catch our show. My name is Mrs. Sam. I'm the children's librarian at Hotchkiss Library of Sharon. We have all sorts of wonderful books there for children of all ages, and lovely crafting and story times besides. The weather is warm enough for us to have outside library programs. Join us for our summer reading kickoff party on June 18th. You can find information on all the events we hold for children and adults alike on our website, HotchkissLibraryofSharon.org, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/HotchkissLibrary. We are open by appointment for browsing and borrowing and computer use every day of the week. This week, Humphrey Rolston will be reading with me. Today's stories will come from Penguin Random House's collection of shorts, Been There, Done That. First, Humphrey will read the story Pop by Tracy Edward Weimer. Then I will read the tale from real life that inspired the author, Baseball. Here is Humphrey Rolston reading Pop by Tracy Edward Weimer.
The truth was killing me. I spit out the last of my sunflower seeds through the chain-link fence and straightened the bill of my hat. I adjusted my belt, making sure the silver clasp was in the middle, right above my zipper. I turned to the bench, and while avoiding my bustling teammates, picked up my glove. Then I walked out of the dugout and headed toward the pitcher's mound. On my way, I hopped over the white chalk that made up the third baseline. Coach Taylor's dad was superstitious. He always sat in the first row. He always wore the same Cincinnati Reds hat. And he always told me, never step on the chalk, never, no matter what, it's bad luck. Raymond, our shortstop and best player, ran up and rested his hand on my back, probably right between the 1 and 0 on my jersey. 3 outs, Brett, just 3 more outs, he said. I nodded. Raymond jogged to his position between second and third base and began fielding ground balls from Lucas, our first baseman. In only 7 words, our best player had put the game on my left arm. 3 more outs and we were city champs. Just 3 more outs. But I pitched all season and I'd already pitched a complete game in the city tournament. The pain in my arm started in my left shoulder and burned all the way to the inside part of my elbow. But I kept it inside, hidden, locked away. My team needed me. I bent over and with my bare hand snatched the Rawlings baseball off the infield grass. I tucked my glove under my arm and massaged the ball in my hands. The ball didn't feel right. It felt slippery, like it would sail from my fingertips and land halfway up the backstop. I held the baseball up to the umpire. When he looked at me, I tossed the ball to him, and he caught it using his umpire's mask. He reached in the black bag, resting on his hip, pulled out a brand new baseball, and tossed it to me. I took it from my glove and looked it over. It was too white, too easy for the batter to see. The sun had just set behind the forest beyond the right field fence, and I didn't want the batter locking in on a bright white meteor coming down the pipe. But I also didn't want to annoy the umpire by asking for another ball. Instead, I bent down next to the pitching rubber and picked up a handful of dirt. With my glove tucked securely under my right arm, I added a little spit and rubbed the dirt into the bright white leather of the ball. While rubbing up the new ball, I strolled behind the pitcher's mound, waiting for Jackson, my catcher, to strap on his shin guards and chest protector. There, hanging over the center field fence, loomed the electronic scoreboard's yellow lights. Home, 1. Visitor, 0. We were the home team. But everyone knew we shouldn't have made it to this game. No one would have predicted us to be winning, that's for sure. Heading into the city championship, We had lost 3 out of our last 4 games. Even worse, before the city tournament began, Coach Taylor took a leave of absence because his dad got really sick. His dad loved watching our games. He'd sit in the first row of the bleachers, probably because his fragile bones couldn't handle walking any farther, his big glasses tucked underneath the bill of his Cincinnati Reds hat. But now, Coach Taylor's dad was gone forever, and Coach Taylor was back in the dugout. "Come on, Brett, just you and Jackie," Coach Taylor shouted, clapping twice. Jackie is what he calls Jackson, who was now crouched behind home plate, waiting for me to begin my warm-up pitches. But my arm couldn't handle any more warm-up pitches. Every time I threw the ball, it felt like 1,000 tiny needles were trying to escape from my shoulder. There's a difference between soreness and pain. This was pain, a sharp, piercing pain that got worse with each pitch. In the first inning, I was fine. Second and third inning, still fine. The pain showed up in the fourth inning, and ever since then, I'd kept it locked inside of me, hoping it would disappear, hoping it would break up and dissolve into my bloodstream and never come back. But the pain stayed, and with each pitch, it was getting worse. All we needed were 3 more outs. And then there'd be no more pain. I could rest all summer, let my muscles and tendons and bones, or whatever was hurting so badly, heal for months. I couldn't let my team down now. They needed me. We had other arms that could pitch, but those kids weren't pitchers. They were throwers. Our real pitchers had already spent their innings for the week. I had all 7 innings left. It was all on me. On my left arm. 1 more inning. Just 1 more. 3 more outs. I stood on the pitching rubber, staring into Jackson's glove. The bleachers around home plate were packed. More people leaned over the fences down both foul lines. This was the last game of the season for everyone, and here I was, standing on the hill above it all, with a chance to win the championship. Only one team wins its last game of the season, and that team could be us. I stepped back, wound up, and threw my first warm-up pitch. As the ball flew out of my hand, a fire ignited in my shoulder. It spread to my elbow and stayed there, pulsating and breathing like a wild flame searching for more oxygen. I bent over, keeping the fire inside, locking it away, hiding it from the batter standing in the on-deck circle. I waved Jackson to the pitcher's mound. He stood from his crouched position and jogged toward me, with our backs to home plate. We walked up the dirt incline. "What's wrong, man?" Jackson said through his catcher's mask. "My arm," I said. "No more warm-ups." Jackson stared at me through the 2 horizontal bars of his catcher's mask. He looked down at my elbow. 3 more outs, he said. "You can do it." Jackson jogged back to home plate. He said something to the umpire, and then the umpire looked at me. "Never step on the chalk. Never." The first batter walked to the plate. He was the lead-off hitter. He was short and fast, probably the fastest player between both teams. He dug his back foot into the dirt and touched home plate with his bat. I stared in at Jackson. From his crouched position, he flashed his index finger, the sign for a fastball. I nodded and began my wind-up. The ball flew from my hand, and the internal flames leapt from my shoulder to elbow. I clenched my teeth, holding the fire inside. The batter swung, and the ball rolled softly between first and second base. I ran toward the first base side and up the baseline to cover the bag. Lucas fielded the ball and flipped it underhand to me. I caught the ball and touched first base with my right foot. "Out!" shouted the umpire. Cheers from the crowd. "That's it, Brett," Raymond said, standing near second base. "Come on now, 2 more outs. With the ball in my glove, I walked to the pitcher's mound. I glanced back at the first baseline. There was my footprint on the chalk. Never step on the chalk. It's bad luck. But it happened during a play when I was hustling to cover first base, not when I was walking to the pitcher's mound. That should make it okay. I reached down for another handful of dirt. The intense pain came when I threw the ball, but the dull ache of my shoulder wouldn't go away either. I rubbed up the ball, looking at Jackson for the sign. Fastball, curveball, changeup. It was his choice. The second batter smoothed the dirt in the batter's box with his cleats. He gripped the bat and took his stance. Jackson flashed two fingers. He wanted a curveball. I wound up, and the ball spun end over end from my fingertips. My shoulder and elbow roared with life, but the ball went where it was supposed to go. The batter swung. The ball flew straight up the twilight sky above the infield. Raymond called everyone off. "Mine! Mine! Mine!" he shouted. He camped underneath the ball and let it fall into his glove. Two outs. The crowd cheered. I kept the fire down, locked inside my left arm. "Come on, Brett," Coach Taylor said. "One more out." He clapped three times, pacing in the dugout. The rest of our team was hanging on to the dugout fence. They were ready to celebrate, ready to jump in a pile on the pitcher's mound. The crowd stood. Jackson called time to the umpire and jogged to the pitcher's mound. He looked at me, breathing hard. "You okay?" he said. I looked down at the baseball in my hand. The white leather was now a dirt-stained cover. The red stitches blazed a trail around the ball. "One more out," he said. "Then you can rest." I took the baseball and pounded it in my glove. Jackson jogged back toward the batter and umpire and crouched behind home plate. The batter was number 9. For some reason, every team had a number 9, and he was always the best hitter. This team was no different. Number 9 smoothed the dirt and dug in. He squatted down low, ready to explode on the next pitch near the strike zone. While staring at me, he spit on the plate. Jackson flashed one finger. "Fastball." I took a deep breath, trying to release the inferno in my shoulder. I lay two fingers across the seams of the baseball inside my glove. I stepped back, wound up, kicked high, and let the ball go. Number 9 swung and missed. I adjusted my belt, feeling for the metal clasp. I grimaced while straightening the bill of my hat. The pain was rearing its head, trying to escape. It took all of my energy to keep it locked inside. Number 9 adjusted his helmet and dug in. He spit again. Jackson put three fingers down. Change up. I gripped the baseball, wound up, and reared back to throw the pitch. When I let go of the ball, my shoulder popped as if it were starting to come unhinged at the joint. Number 9 swung, and it sounded like a sledgehammer hitting a flagpole. The baseball rocketed off his bat, sailing high and far down the third baseline. It cleared the outfield fence and disappeared into the darkening sky. "Foul ball!" shouted the home plate umpire, his hands in the air. The crowd groaned with disapproval. But Number 9 didn't think twice about it. He knew it was foul. He picked up his bat and gripped it tightly in front of his face. The umpire threw me a new baseball. I leaned down and gathered a handful of dirt and rubbed it in the leather cover. I put the ball in my glove and gripped the seams with two fingers. I wanted to throw a fastball, though my shoulder and elbow begged me not to. I stood on the top of the pitcher's mound, waiting for the sign. Jackson flashed one. "Come on, Brett!" Coach Taylor yelled from the dugout. I took a deep breath and let my shoulders down, trying to relax. But the pain in my left arm made my hand shake. Number 9 took his stance and glared at me. Jackson put his glove out, steadying the target. I gripped the baseball, my hand trembling. I wound up, reached back, and let it fly. Pop! I grabbed my shoulder. Number 9 swung the bat. I collapsed on the dirt, buried underneath my teammates.
That was Humphrey Rolston reading Pop by Tracy Edward Weimer. Now, I'm going to read the story that inspired the story, or what really happened. It's called Baseball by Tracy Edward Weimer. Baseball. It's the only thing I've ever loved, as long as I have loved my parents and siblings. The word itself is like family to me. When I was a toddler, perhaps shortly after learning to walk, my best friend was a big, red, plastic bat that was twice my size. I was a preacher's kid, and I'd walk around the annual church pig roast, swinging the bat at anything that showed up in my tiny strike zone. A fence post, a horsefly, a human leg, another toddler. Can you imagine? The preacher's kid milling about with a giant red bat, bashing old ladies' legs and whacking little kids in the face? It's a wonder my parents didn't put me on the rotisserie with the pig. My most memorable baseball day happened when I was 10. That year, I made the all-star team in my little league. Our team traveled to small towns around Indianapolis, playing in tournaments and battling other all-star teams for local pride. Our coach was all business. He wore a black whistle around his neck. During he belted ground balls through the dirt and made us field them barehanded. If we weren't playing to our potential, he made us run laps, and then he belted more ground balls at us. To say the least, we were prepared for tough situations. One tournament brought us to Rushville, a tiny town located southeast of Indianapolis. The first day of the tournament, we won a game and lost one, putting us in the loser's bracket. One more loss, and we'd be going home. We had to keep winning if we wanted to stay and play. On Saturday, the last day of the tournament, we played our first game at 8 o'clock in the morning. From 8 until noon, we won 3 games in a row, which earned us a spot in the championship game that same evening. We were on a hot streak, but it was a typical Indiana summer, full of heat and humidity, and we were physically and emotionally drained. During the championship game, we were down to 3 runs in the early innings. We had fought our way to the title game, but in our dugout, there was little hope of defeating a well-rested, high-caliber team. It was the bottom of the 3rd inning. I was playing shortstop. I clearly remembered what happened next, because I've replayed the moment 1,000 times in my head. The batter hit a pop-up down the first baseline in foul territory. Our first baseman, his name was BJ, turned and ran, holding his glove in the air. He caught the ball and slammed it against the chain-link fence. The crowd erupted. Even the opposing team's parents cheered. It was a tremendous backhanded catch, especially for a 10-year-old. But when BJ returned to his position at first base, his face was bright red, and he couldn't catch his breath. He leaned over, hands on his knees, trying to take in as much air as he could, but he couldn't breathe. BJ took out his asthma inhaler and took 2 puffs from it. He lay down in the dirt, panting harder, his chest rising and falling in sudden bursts. Our coaches rushed out of the dugout, and then BJ's parents hurried down from the bleachers. More parents brought over cold towels and placed them on BJ's forehead and arms. Then sirens echoed through the park. The ambulance sped through the lot and stopped next to the same chain-link fence where BJ had made the spectacular catch. I stood silent with my teammates just behind the pitcher's mound. I'd seen kids twist an ankle or fall awkwardly on a wrist, but I'd never seen someone who couldn't breathe. This was way more serious. The paramedics lifted BJ onto a stretcher and wheeled him toward the ambulance. BJ's face was as pink as bubblegum and covered with an oxygen mask. He was panting harder than before, and his terrified eyes were filled with fear. BJ was my teammate and my friend. We had played on the same team in the regular season, and I didn't know if he'd be okay or not. The last thing I wanted to do was play more baseball. I wanted to give him my next breath of fresh air. Sirens wailed, and the ambulance sped away. Our coach gathered our entire team on the pitcher's mound. He told us that BJ would be okay, and then instructed us to focus on the game, because that's what BJ would want us to do. No one spoke, but we all nodded. In the last inning, we were losing by 2 runs and down to our final out. But we kept fighting. We strung together one hit after another and loaded the bases. The hits kept coming, and we won the game. After the celebration and trophy presentation, we visited the local hospital. There was BJ, breathing like his old self and smiling at his new championship trophy. Baseball. It provides moments of tragedy and triumph, and tests the very depths of the human spirit. Like I said, the word itself is like family to me. Thank you for listening to Short Stories with Mrs. Sam, brought to you by the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. Tune in every week on Sunday at 8:30 a.m. to WHDD 91.9 FM to catch our show. All sounds in this recording are from freesound.org.